Welcome to Raised on D&D Podcast. Each month, Raised on D&D brings you inspirational interviews with tips and strategies to enrich your family's gaming experience.
Your host for Raised on D&D has been a game master for 30 years and father to three gamers.
Here is Nick Cardarelli.
Welcome back, gamers. I'm your host, Nick Cardarelli, and this is Raised on D&D. My next guest, he's from Colorado and she's originally from Tampa Bay. Together, they own and operate downtown Plant City, Florida's exclusive family tabletop gaming club, The Side Quest. Please welcome Chris and Jeanette Mack. Hi, guys.
Hi.
The club goes wild.
Well, thanks for being on the show. We kind of want to get to know you guys more as gamers before we jump into all the exciting things you guys are doing there in Plant City. Who wants to start us off?
I guess I'll go first.
All right, Chris. Well, can you take us back to your first experience with tabletop role-playing games and Dungeons & Dragons?
Oh, man. I think my first experience was the good old Red Box. Back in the early 80s, I lived in a small town in Wisconsin, and I didn't play hockey, so there wasn't a whole lot else to do. And me and my small group of friends just kind of battered this old box open and figured it out, and suddenly it was like we could be somewhere where the sun was shining, and it was warm outside, and we were able to just do, fantastic things. I never let it go.
Well, Chris, do you remember how you got a hold of that old red box?
I was suckered in. One of my friends from school said, "Hey, come on over this weekend. We're playing games and whatnot." And, sure, why not? So I went over. They said, "Here, you can be an elf." I'm like, okay, what does that mean? And they said, "Just follow along, you'll figure it out." And I did, and I never really stopped.
Fantastic. And Jeanette, how did you get into tabletop role-playing games?
Well, I lived in Germany. I was a preteen, about 11 or 12. And I was babysitting for this family, and they invited me over to play one night, and under the guise that I was going to babysit, because otherwise my parents would never have let me gone over to a house of adults. And I don't know, they handed me a character sheet. I think it was playing a ranger. I remember drawing the horse that I lived, that I sat on. I had a horse. That was like my first exposure, but I really didn't get a true exposure to tabletop role playing until I met Chris, and he was living next to my parents' house. We were stationed in Savannah, Georgia, and we were having a yard sale, and they invited me over for drinks that night and to play games. I thought board games. I grew up with board games and Atari and all that stuff. And they launched me into Star Wars. Unfortunately, that's been the downhill slide from there.
Is this the Star Wars West End Games we're talking about?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. And were you a couple then, or was this just meeting Chris?
We were not a couple then.
I was actually deployed at the time.
Yeah, we hadn't actually met. We were probably about 3 weeks into playing, and they had just introduced me to GURPS when he came back home from being deployed, and that's when we met.
Wow. Oh my goodness. So Chris, what happened? She fell in love with your mad GMing skills? Is that what it was?
Well, not exactly. We found that we were invading each other's space. And so there's a little bit of an animosity at the beginning. Kind of a, well, I don't know really what you'd call it, but it was, oh, no, I don't think so. Oh, no, I don't think so. We played that off of each other for a little while before we realize that, you know, maybe we make a pretty good couple.
Yeah, we make a good team.
So fast forwarding, you guys are parents. How many children do you guys have?
We have three boys. They are currently 26, 24, and 22.
Okay. And so your love for tabletop role-playing games went back to even before your relationship together. So when did you guys introduce that to the children growing up?
Well, I think that it was kind of an ever-present game environment. So although we love tabletop role-play, we also were into trading card games and miniature combat, like Games Workshop stuff. And it was a routine occurrence to keep the wee children from crawling across battlegrounds, you know, because we would play on the living room floor being, you know, young family in the army and not a lot of furniture. So they've always, I mean, from their birth, been kind of infused with this gaming energy. And there were times where, you know, you've got a real life. I mean, everyone that's gaming knows that real life is a bummer, but we never really let it stray too far. I always thought that the problem solving and the stretching your imagination has always been just paramount.
That's incredible. And Jeanette, what kind of positive things did you see from raising the kids on gaming?
I think that it definitely provided a lot of family time that families, there, you know, you have your sports minded families, right? Where they're going to soccer games and baseball games. And our children were more the arts based type of minded children. And we spent a lot of time on World of Warcraft together. We spent a lot of time playing tabletop board games or like tabletop board game day and going to conventions and just geeking out on things that were very different. So we're a different kind of sports minded family, so to speak. I think it was when Casey was 12 or 13, he's our oldest, that we literally sat down with them and made actual role play characters. I think that was when we played Cinnabar, and it kind of got them into the concept of having to use an imagination outside of what a computer game gave you or what a board game structured provided for you. It's funny, our oldest tends to not play as much or doesn't really enjoy it. We're trying to get him into it. But the other two, unfortunately, I think we've created little mini monsters.
I think he is into the tactical miniature gaming and war gaming, stuff like that. He really likes the command and control aspect of actual real-life strategy gaming. I think he really enjoys that. Well, not so much the character development of role play.
Well, mine are 15, 14, soon to be 13. They're all little stair steps. And we are halfway, my wife and I, halfway as parents from where you guys are with three adult children. And a lot of our listeners are starting their children off just like we did, very, very young. And so they're at home now gaming with their 4 to 8 year olds and their 10 year olds and 12 year olds. One of the things that I like when I'm talking to those parents who have those very young children is telling them how things are going to kind of evolve and give them kind of a heads up on, you know, hey, when they become teenagers, gaming changes a little bit. So take us a little ahead for us and tell us how does gaming with them around the table change now that they're all adults?
Okay, let's do this. About 5 years ago, we opened a wellness center, and the boys came to us wanting us to teach their friends how to play D&D. Now, I hadn't played D&D since I was like 11 or 12. And I think it was 3.5. I don't even know what it was. It was just D&D. And I was like, I hate D&D. I don't want to play this. Why can't we play GURPS? Why can't we play these other Star Wars something? And Chris talked us into it. We would play every Saturday night at the Wellness Center because it was a safe place. It wasn't at our house, you know, and they were all kids. I mean, I think the youngest was Nicholas. He was freshman in high school, maybe. Yeah, freshman in high school, maybe. And to have those children, literally these 13, 14, and 15-year-old children play with us for 5 years and still to this day play with us.
Wow.
And now they're all legal adults, and the language definitely has changed. It's definitely been an evolution in language. The mindset that they have when they play the combat portions, when they're trying to do the critical thinking of solving puzzles and mysteries, there's life experience that has to go along with that, right? When you're 12, you have no life experience. But when you're 18, you have a little bit more life experience. And you've watched a couple more movies than you did before that were maybe R-rated that gave you better ideas on how to solve some problems. So that evolution has been really fascinating to watch as a parent, seeing them. But I would love, sometimes I really wish that they would take these skills that they learn in D&D and put it into real life. Right? Like these critical thinking skills that we work so hard to teach them, and they come home and they're like, Mom, the water's not working. Well, figure it out. Like, Google it. I don't know.
And Chris, what would you add to that?
Definitely the language changes. And you've kind of got to adapt with that, because on the one hand, you've got these small people that used to be really tiny people, and now they're almost medium-sized. And they're using medium-sized words and expressions of, emotions that small kids don't do. And faced with a lot of problems, especially if they come from a video gaming background, you can't mash A, mash B. And sometimes violence isn't the answer. Mm-hmm. And so as they develop these skills in game, their real life experience also comes with gaming experience. And if they've been handed a really rough campaign, then you're going to get some dirty, gritty players. But if it's kind of well-rounded, then they're going to bring up well-rounded players. I can't be thankful enough for the ability to have our kids have interactions with other kids playing the games with us. That outside influence is really, really important, because there were some that were just, I don't know, they won't make decisions or they won't really engage, and they'll just roll a die and determine how that's going to influence whatever's going on with little characters. And there's not much buy-in. But having that investment as they mature, that's really, really impressive. And it's really, it's just another, door jam pencil line for you to measure your kids against the way that they play. And you can watch it grow and change with them. Really, really cool.
So I'm gonna tell a family secret right here. My wife's gonna kill me. My wife and I, we both grew up in households where language was very important. My family is from the Northeast, where a certain a bad word is used as a comma in every sentence, right? And so I also grew up, though, in a household that said, watch your mouth. And they would use that comma and say, watch your mouth. I don't want to hear that language come out of your mouth. So I grew up like that. And my wife is from Western Kentucky, and her family is a good and proper country folk, and they don't talk like that. But growing up with our children, we were very relaxed with allowing them to express themselves, right? That's how we're going to put it. So when we sat down to game, I'll never forget, we were playing some of the very first games, and my youngest at the time was about 7 and got so excited in combat and expressed verbally how they were going to kick his butt, but he didn't say butt. And we both shocked, looking at each other and looking at him. And he said, what? I didn't say it. My character did. And we knew then that we were in trouble. So that was our first, oh no, what have we done? But that freedom that they experience in tabletop role-playing games, that ability to make decisions, that ability to express themselves, that comes out at the table. You want to give them a little leeway with that. And you guys mentioned that you listened to the episode with me and my oldest, my daughter. And we mentioned at the end of that episode that she would have liked to play a Star Wars role-playing game with her friends. Well, we actually made that happen. And this is a few years back. So we didn't have the side quests at the time. So we went to the Mellow Mushroom Pizza Place in Lakeland, Florida. And that pizza place is all sci-fi themed. And so we thought that that was the perfect location for our Star Wars game. So her and a bunch of her friends got together and we sat down, we played Star Wars. We used the old D20 version of it. And because they were all familiar with that sort of thing. And some of them, it was their very first gaming experience. But the reason we chose Star Wars is because they were all Star Wars fans. And so I could say things like, you see a Jawa, and I didn't have to spend 20 minutes explaining what a Jawa was, right? And so that's the appeal of those franchise RPGs. Moving forward, you guys own a gaming store, and my family and I, we're new members, and we have been to the store multiple times. We love the side quest, and we have played Magic the Gathering, and we've played in Dungeons and Dragons 5th edition games there. We're practicing our painting skills on Warhammer 40K figures. It's amazing. But tell us, how did we go from having the wellness center and playing Dungeons and Dragons on Saturdays to now opening and owning the side quest?
The concept of playthrough wellness was really huge for us. And, you know, work hard, play hard is something that's, you know, it's that tagline in the world. But as healthcare professionals, I'm a massage therapist. Chris is an aromatherapist. We found that playing Dungeons and Dragons and just playing anything, even on our bye weeks when we would play Munchkins on our bye weeks, you know, having that ability to stop life for 4 or 5 hours once a week and be able to just disconnect and play something else was very healthy for us as adults. And then we saw how healthy it was for these children. And we had always, I mean, from back in the 90s, early 90s, when we first got married and had kids, we were like, we should open a gaming store. You know, that's every gamer's dream.
Yes.
And,
every gamer's dream.
And, you know, obviously that didn't happen. And the wellness center has been open for 5 years. And we had an opportunity last year, actually this year, to be able to expand the wellness, the play for wellness portion. And it took about 6 or 8 months to figure out what the side quest look like for us, because it literally is 100% a side quest of our business. Until we figured out the dynamic and what we wanted as gamers, where would we play? What would it look like for us? We were able to put a foundation down. And then from there, the members that have come in have helped us evolve it to that next level. And we're still evolving. I mean, well, we've been open since May.
Fantastic. Chris, tell us a little bit about what the side quest offers for folks who haven't visited yet.
Wow. It's just kind of a cool place, I think. That's the best way to start. It is membership driven. So members can have our rate access to the location. They get access to our library, games and books and minis and terrain and armies or whatever. So if you want to come in, you want to try a game, come on in, we'll play a game. We'll try it out. If you have a crew that you want to bring and play role-playing games, we've got rooms that will do that. We offer paint night for people to come and paint their miniatures, as well as board game nights with big expensive games like Gloomhaven, so you can come and play that without the huge monetary investment. We just kind of want to keep a cool, safe place where like-minded people can come and play and enjoy each other's company.
What we love about it is I've noticed, and your oldest, Casey, he's kind of your acting manager, right? And so I'm deep in this Dungeons and Dragons dungeon crawl with a bunch of strangers. And Chris, you're behind the DM screen, and I'm just having a ball. And one of the things that I liked the most was my middle son, Josh, he's out there playing Magic the Gathering with other customers who are just kind of coming in with their decks, and they're sitting down and they're going, oh, you want to play Magic? And they're playing Magic. And I'm not having to look after him. I'm not having to entertain him. I'm looking over every once in a while. I'm a good dad, right? Hey, is he still there? Great. But I'm looking over and he is having a great time. And one of the things that I was most impressed about with our last visit is Casey would notice as the Magic players were kind of rotating between opponents, and he would look, and if there was somebody who didn't have an opponent, man, he just jumped right in and pulled out a deck and sat down. And by the time he went through one game or one hand of Magic, then it would be time to rotate again and people have different partners. And that was really great. That really impressed me, because I was like, well, look at that. He's not just behind the counter. He's getting out there and he's helping people and he's making everybody feel well at home.
Yeah, and I think when I say it's a really cool place to hang out, that really is, it's not like a mission statement. I mean, that's a little bit, it would be a cool place to hang out. But it helps. I mean, especially for a lot of younger people who are into the gaming. Right now, it's cool because it's so popular. Thank you, Matt Mercer, and everything that you've done. But for a long time, a lot of us older guys were like, this is like not something to talk about in public. Or at a coffee shop. You want to play at a Denny's? Are you crazy? You know, you can't do that. But if there was a welcoming place where like-minded people could get together and even just talk, you know, you can talk for hours about your favorite characters, the army you want to feel, the this brand new deck you can't wait to try it out on Friday because Aaron's got to get it, you know. It's all of that. All of that community is what makes, I think, the side quest really kind of stand out.
Now, Jeanette, a lot of folks who listen to the show, and one of the things that we talk about a lot is gamer moms. And you're actually a dungeon master yourself. And that game that I played in, you were supposed to be the dungeon master that night. Is that correct?
Yes.
So Jeanette, as a gamer mom, are you the forever dungeon master? Is that the situation?
So I think that has evolved to be the true answer. Yes. But I think it's 100% by choice. I do try to play now, and it's very frustrating. I don't know if it's because there the long pauses and stuff like that versus being behind the screen and being able to. I'm very multitasky. I like to have a lot of things on my plate at once, and being a DM really fills that desire to be all of those things. I just finished a 2-year campaign where we did the Tyranny of the Dragon. I do like the mods. I haven't done anything homebrew yet, but I do really like the mods. And when we went into the very last chapter of that campaign, I remember going in thinking, okay, I'm going to win this game. I'm going to beat these guys. I am tired of losing. And I almost won. I really did almost win. I did not hold back when I brought out Tiamat. And I'm not kidding. So it was super fun. So when everybody came up and said they wanted to play Mad Mage, I had started Mad Mage before the wonderful scenario that happened in 2020. We were about 6 months, 8 months into it. We had gotten to like the 8th or 9th level, and we had to, we were deep.
That dude, we were 7th level.
felt like 9th though. Feel that way, especially for the dungeon master, because you're a couple levels.
I was already
ahead.
There. Yeah. Right. I was there. I was at 9. They were still in 7. And we had to stop, unfortunately. And I was so excited that everybody wanted to get back into the dungeon, because I thought for sure Patrick was like, I'm never going to play this again. I don't want to have to start from the beginning. And, but then of course the first night I get sick and I can't run. And so this is the first time that Chris and I have batted off of each other like this, where he's ran one session and now I'm going to come back in this Friday and try to pick up.
cover up my mistake.
What he did. I don't know. Cause he totally DMs so different than me. Cause I try not to DM like a girl, but at the end of the day, I am a girl.
I totally understand what you're saying about waiting on the pauses. I think you and my wife, Cassandra, would get along swimmingly, because she's an investigator type. So she's figuring out the clues. She doesn't like red herrings. I mean, the NPC said, guard the caravan. Why are we running to the old haunted mill? That doesn't make any sense, right? She's a no nonsense, straight to the mission kind of gal. And I would always be intimidated running the game, because she would be figuring out the this is going to happen and that's going to happen. We need to go. And I'm like, oh my goodness. And what was great was gaming with the children kind of, I think, slowed her down a little bit. She's like, okay, let me let them catch up and figure out what's going on. But that's fantastic. So now you guys have the side quests, and you've got all of these great programs to build this community right there in downtown Plant City. And membership is growing. I know my family has been enjoying the side quest. What does the future look like? What are some of the things that you guys haven't done yet that you're hoping to do, that you're hoping to make available or happen with the side quest?
Something big. I think we're not sure on timing. It probably maybe 6 months to a year out. We want to do a Game Makers convention, where we have local people that actually make their own games. We've actually connected with a couple here that are from Lakeland and a game maker from Plant City to set up and bring their games and play and have the community come together and learn that we have local artists right here in our own community that actually make and create these amazing games that we play. So that's one thing that we have on the plan. And we're looking to partner with the Brick City Bricks, which is a used Lego store in downtown, with them as well, to kind of work together and find some collaboration in that department.
That's fantastic. And one of the biggest thing about having a community like the Side Quest is being able to foster those creative game makers and give them a place where they can showcase their games. And you can do that now, right, Chris? I mean, if I wanted to run Dungeons and Dragons or a module that I've written, I can come down to the Side Quest. I can set up and people can sit down and play. Is that right?
Absolutely. We've got, you know, rooms that can close off. We've got the open bay area that you can play in. We wholly welcome people bringing their crews and just come and play. And you know what? We clean up. You want to order pizza? Order pizza. We clean it up. Nobody has to worry about dogs jumping on them or having to go home to explain to other dogs, your dog, you know, any of that. It's just a really cool place that you can meet this local, it's not someone's house. And then do something that, you know, most people are fine with doing in their living room, but do it here with ambient music and lighting and stuff like that.
That's fantastic. And Jeanette, I love what you said about partnering with your local Lego store, because I know a lot of gamers who Lego is what they use for terrain. They use the Lego minis for their miniatures and because they're so customizable. And that's fantastic. I think a joint event like that would really be exciting to a lot of gamers.
When we started with our terrain and miniatures, we were using Legos. We were invested a lot of money, and we have a lot of Lego terrain and Lego minis that we can use. And then eventually the plan was Mad Mage is going to be all Lego. All the terrain's going to be Lego.
Wow.
So that's the plan.
Patrick, he is your middle son or your youngest?
Correct.
He's your middle son. Have you broken the news to Patrick that he's making the whole map in Lego yet?
No, not yet. I was actually hoping Casey would do it, but we'll see what happens.
Well, guys, a lot of the folks who are listening to Raised on D&D, of like you and I, we grew up on tabletop role-playing games, started off really young. But some of the folks who are listening, they are really just getting in. Chris, like you mentioned earlier, things like Critical Role and Matt Mercer, and really thanks to a lot of the lockdowns and the virtual tabletops online, like Roll20, has really gotten people into tabletop role-playing games. And so there's a lot of folks at home who they're in a situation where they love Dungeons and Dragons, but they're not really sure how to share it with their families. And there's others who are just kind of getting into it because they have teens at home who are like, hey, we saw this on Stranger Things and now we want to play it, right? Can you guys give some advice to those parents who maybe aren't accustomed to gaming with children and how to kind of open that door and sit down at the table and turn the phones off and really game together? Do you have any advice for them?
It's not easy. If it's not something that you grew up doing, then interactive storytelling is a completely different type of what if scenario. And you really have to just kind of jump in and embrace it. You know, don't try to figure out why the magic is. Just go with that there is magic. And practice this weird problem solving thing every day. When the kids were young, any time that we were out shopping or running errands or doing something and they were getting antsy, okay, fine. Zombie apocalypse, you get one thing out of this aisle to survive on. What's it going to be? You know, and it's sort of like, this trowel. Like, well, okay, why did you pick that? And then you just kind of work with it. You develop these things and you just pull stuff out of the air. And before you know it, you're creating environments in your head and you're encouraging the kids to use language that is descriptive and innovative and not verbose for the sense of being, you know, immaculate, but just because it's more exact and it really mutates into this cool storytelling. And it's not easy if you haven't done it, but it's not really hard to get started either. You just got to jump in.
Fantastic. Thanks, Chris. And Jeanette, what would you like to add to that?
Well, I definitely would. I noticed that a lot of the middle schools and high schools are starting Dungeons and Dragons clubs. There's always a teacher that wants to play and wants to share the love. So using those resources in the community to help you. We just set up at the Tampa Bay Comic Con, and we had a parent who is a homeschooler, and her son is interested in playing Dungeons and Dragons. And she found us, and where she's in Zephyr Hills, which is a 20-minute drive. And she wants to connect her son with us so we can help teach him and put together maybe a homeschool group that comes weekly and plays. So finding those resources in your community that will help you as a parent be able to help your children. And because maybe you're not into playing, but you don't know until you sit at the table and you make a character that you know that this is actually worth playing.
And that's fantastic. And Jeanette, you keep us posted about that homeschool group, because my wife and I have been homeschooling our children for the last 10 years. And so we would be super excited for them to connect with other homeschoolers around the game table as well. So,
oh yeah, awesome.
Well, thank you guys so much. Thank you for everything that you're doing for the Central Florida community, especially there in Plant City, developing this safe, family-friendly place where we can play war games and miniature games and board games and role-playing games and card games, all of those things together, and can meet new people and can try out new skills like painting and learning new games. So thank you so much for everything that you're doing for the gaming community. And thank you for being on the show today.
Thank you for having us.
Absolutely. Absolute pleasure.